Hello, everybody. Welcome to our event today. I want to make sure, are you seeing and hearing me? Go on, team.
Absolutely, you're looking great.
All right, good. Thank you, everybody, for showing up on this Saturday. We have really been looking forward to this one. The last financial update we did was 6 months ago, and we've been tracking things and doing all that we can to really figure out what's going on, and then to also do whatever we can to empower you with the awareness and understanding that we have. So since Thrive came out 3.5 years ago, we have heard from a wide range of people. You know, we've heard from inventors and philanthropists and governments and insiders from different agencies. We've heard from members of the Asian Dragon families. We've heard from just a full array of people. And in addition to that, I know last month we put out the array of news sources that we tune into, really foster full-time as a researcher on this in order to glean, you know, this really huge picture and cull it down to the most useful, likely information. And this is really a think tank. We don't know, you know, we're really doing our best to make sense of what's going on. And as I said, empower you with our understanding. And we welcome your insights and participation in this, of course. But I just wanted you to know that obviously we're willing to take some risks in order to, you know, to have made Thrive and then to keep up with all of this. We don't reveal the sources, the specific sources from our insider scoop for our security and for theirs. What we will do is take the information that we've gleaned and spent a long time cross-corroborating, you know, to see does this add up with this, and share that today. So today's event is going to be a pretty big download where we're just going to tell you what we've been figuring out in the last years and especially the last 6 months, and then invite your questions. We have some polls also, so we'll get a sense of who's here and what your orientation is. That said, we are specifically not giving any legal or financial advice. This is just purely for the purposes of analysis and discussion. And I also need to say that you're being recorded. So if you do participate, you are agreeing to that because we archive this and also we'll make another blog out of it for the general network. I'd love it if you would fill out the evaluation at the end of the event because it really helps us to know what's working and what isn't for you. And the way that it will run most smoothly is if you use the chat for comments and to share resources with each other. And we'll also from time to time add things into the chat window. And in fact, one thing I was thinking of adding in there right off is in addition to the resources that we published last month, which you can find on our archived blogs about all of our news sources, there's a new one that's been really helpful more recently, which is the BRICSPost.com. And I think Foster can put that link into the chat window for any of you to follow up on after this show or interaction. Anyway, so if you use the chat window for the comments and to share resources, and we'll do that also, and then use the Q&A to get questions to us. Raising your hand doesn't help because I can't tell. I need to, you know, field the questions so that we get the widest array of questions asked. So please don't just raise your hand and expect us to call on you that way. If you have any technical issues, please write to events@thrivemovement.com and Mitch is there to help you with that. And if he does help you and you resolve your problem, please let him know. It's very satisfying to know that what we're doing is actually solving the problem. Also, if you want to participate, the way it's going to work is that Goa will make you a panelist. You'll exit the full screen mode. and click on the green camera icon next to your name. So why don't you locate that now and make sure you can see your camera icon so that it's there. And if you can't, you can write into Mitch and get that solved. You will be unmuted. And then please keep the question succinct, because, you know, like 2 minutes for a comment and a minute for a question or something, so that we can hear from more of you. Anyway, so this is how it's going to work. And if there are additional questions that don't get handled, which I'm sure there will be, then you can continue the conversation on the Thrive Together event page, where the comments are available for you to do, and will show up there also. And so, as I said, Foster's going to begin with an overview of, well, actually just a real download of what we've been figuring out, and then invite your participation after that. And like I said, thanks a lot for joining us. We cherish this relationship. It's what gives me hope, is that we're really all in this together, and that with a common vision. So thank you. Foster, take it away.
Okay. Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. You know, when we get back from the kinds of travels and exploration we've been doing recently, which are so exciting, talking with advisors, talking with inventors, talking with project innovators, connected with our Thrive Connect initiative and so forth, it's so inspiring to us that one of the things that we love to do when we return is, you know, sit down with our team and sit down with family members and friends and just kind of give them a download on what we're learning. And this is an extension of that. And I'm particularly grateful to those of you who have joined Thrive Together, because it's really intended to be that. You know, this isn't a gripe session on, you know, Facebook or YouTube or something like that. This is for people who are really seriously want to know what's going on in the world and what they can do to make it a better place. So this is like our big think tank. And we're thrilled with the response to this topic today. There's a lot of people from all over the world on the call. And we're going to take a little while to just download what we've been learning, give an overview of the global financial situation, and then we'll be opening it up for interactions from everyone else, which is our favorite part. But first of all, we want to make sure to bring you up to speed. And here's an overview of what I want to share. I want to talk about predictions that we or others have made in the past, particularly 6 months ago when we did a similar event. And then I want to talk about critical trends that we're seeing that are in the public view. Then we want to talk about other trends that are playing out behind closed doors, and for a lot of people who don't have the time or the inclination or the resources to do a lot of research, you may not know about a lot of these things, and that's why we want to bring you up to speed. And then we want to talk about, given all of that information, what do we see as likely next? What are other experts that we follow predicting is apt to happen next? And then we want to talk about, well, what is there to do given all that? How can we each hone our efforts to mitigate the problems and really create a world for everyone to thrive? And then finally, I want to talk, a number of people have been asking me, particularly with a lot of the bad news that's going on in the world, just kind of the intensifying New World Order shenanigans. A lot of people have been asking me, well, what makes you still feel hopeful? And so I took some time to reflect on that. And I want to share my thinking on that with you, and then we'll open it up. So that's the overview. What we want to actually start with is a poll. And if Goel brings the poll up, I'll lead you through it. And the first poll, even though this is the topic here is an overview of the global economy, we want to start with getting your sense of your outlook on what's going to happen, what is happening in the U.S. economy, because what happens in the U.S. economy is so central to what has been happening and what's going to happen in the global economy, that we want to start there. And the majority of the people on the call are from the U.S. But what happens in the U.S. economy is going to affect everybody in the world. So we want to start there. So you'll see in front of you this poll, and I want you to check on, you want you to check one of these. So let's go through the questions. The first one is, and the question is, how do you feel about the outlook for the U.S. economy? The first answer is that you feel that the dollar's strong and the market's up, showing that things are finally back on a firm foundation and getting better, which is a lot of what you'll hear from the mainstream news. The second one is that the U.S. economy will be fine as soon as the rest of the world falls in line with the Western banking agenda, the Rothschild-Rockefeller agenda. The third one is the U.S. is running on the fumes of fake money and huge debt and at risk of collapse. Next one is the U.S. will be isolated and weakened because it's unwilling to participate in the alternative asset-backed financial system being created by the BRICS countries. That's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, as well as, you know, over 100 other countries that have joined in that alliance now. And the final one is that the U.S. will prosper by partnering with the rest of the world in a healthier new asset-backed international financial system. So please choose which one of those is most likely to you and hit submit.
We've got almost all the responses, just a few more seconds.
It's great for us to get a feel for who's on the call and what's the orientation as we move forward. So thanks for doing this.
Okay, there you go. There's the results.
Okay, and remember, when you're looking at these results, you can click on the opposite where it says questions. You can click on one of those bars and expand to the right so that you can see more of the questions again. Well, once again, I'm impressed by how informed our network seems to be. Thanks for doing your homework. And those last four options, of course, some of these can all be true simultaneously, but there are 32% think that the U.S. is running on fumes of fake money, et cetera. 23% that the U.S. will be isolated and weakened because it's unwilling to participate. And 24% that the U.S. will prosper by partnering with the rest of the world. Okay, great. Thank you for that. We'll have a couple more polls as we go along. But let's move on to predictions that have come to pass. You know, last November, when we finally felt that the research we'd been doing for several years since the film came out had progressed to the point where it was solid enough to begin to share publicly, we shared a bunch of things. And here's some of the things that we were sharing then that have come to pass. The BRICS Bank has now been funded and is going operational. There is a Shanghai Gold Exchange. There is a new rating service, which provides an option to Fitch and Moody's and Standard & Poor and so forth, that I think is going to be much more honest in its rating, given that it's not beholden to the Western banking cabal to do their bidding on rating particular corporations and governments, especially the U.S. and so forth. The AIIB, the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, has now been launched with the participation of usual U.S. allies like the U.K. and Germany and over 50 other countries. The U.S. has chosen not to participate in the founding of that, and Japan is the only other major country that has chosen not to participate at this time, most likely because the Prime Minister Abe is, as far as we can tell, is very much a puppet for the Rockefeller Rothschild banking system so far. So we have been told that there are deals going on behind closed doors that Japan is preparing to join, but not until it's safe and appropriate to do that, given their obligations. So another one is that we had predicted, based on information from our sources, that there would be numerous banker and corporate CEO resignations. There have been over 500 of them worldwide. And we also said that there would probably be suspicious deaths in the banking and corporate communities. And we've been seeing those. I think there's over 40 of those now in the European and U.S. banking community. And there have been arrests of bankers in Iceland. Also, the U.S. has continued to stall the IMF 2010 reforms that would rebalance the representation of countries in the IMF in terms of decision making, and also include more currencies like the yuan in the international basket of currencies. The suppression of gold and silver prices has continued artificially. And it looks from our sources, we're being told that that's apt to continue until the yuan, the Chinese currency, is globally accepted. Because meanwhile, they're having the opportunity to buy gold and silver at low prices, while the Western bankers are suppressing the prices in order to keep interest rates from going up, which would so threaten the precarious situation of the major U.S. banks and government themselves. Finally, I just want to add in terms of the validation of a number of our insider sources, because some of the things that they say, we're like, what? And then, a few weeks or a few months later, it happens again and again. And our sources have predicted the end of quantitative easing by the Federal Reserve, which was pretty outrageous, given that Federal Reserve was still printing between $50 and $70 billion of new fake money a month. And now they have suspended that right on schedule. We're told that that's because their franchise to print money has been suspended by the Asian elders to whom they're indebted. They also predicted the revaluation of the Swiss franc, and a few days later that happened. And then we were told that China would be making major infrastructure investments in Brazil. We were just told that about a week and a half to 2 weeks ago. And then sure enough, a few days later, it started coming out in the mainstream news that is in fact going on, to the tunes of tens of billions of dollars. So that's a sample of the things that might have sounded outrageous when we said them or when people said them to us, but now they are in fact occurring, and it certainly provides pieces of the puzzle showing the trends that are emerging. So let's move on to trends next. What are some of the trends that we're seeing that are in the public view that have to do with global finance? First of all, negative interest rates, or what Chase Bank has taken to calling balance sheet utilization fees, or BSUFs. What that really means is, rather than getting interest on your deposits at the bank, now you're going to have to pay them for them to keep your money while they fractionally multiply it for their own benefit. So you can tell this is getting quite Orwellian, and yet whatever they can get away with, they're obviously going to continue to do. Meanwhile, Citigroup, Chase, Barclays, and the Royal Bank of Scotland have been fined a total of $9 billion, which is a lot of money for their participation in rigging international markets. Again, that's a lot of money. It's good to see that there are some fines and so forth. But if you stand back and put this in context, there are no individual prosecutions, no jail time, no companies shut down. And meanwhile, during that same time, those same banks made an estimated $85 billion on their actions. So a Some wag might call this merely a cost of doing business. And of course, to the banks, that's all that it seems. It's just a little slap on the wrist publicly to keep the people quiet, keep them from revolting. They, you know, they pay under 10% or around 10%, basically as a fee to the government to let them keep rigging things, and then business goes on as usual. All of the major banks have also had to comply with a government requirement to submit plans for a complete economic collapse, their own economic collapse, which of course could lead to larger economic collapses. And they've all done that. And there's good reason for them to do that, because the numbers I've heard are north of $700 trillion in derivatives debt that they're currently holding on their books. And obviously, they're not a solvent institution if that were to be taken seriously. Now, speaking of derivatives, we've also started to hear around the world about bail-ins. And anybody who doesn't understand what's already happened in Cyprus, they seem to be gearing up for it in Greece and other countries. And the legislation is already in place in the U.S., most major countries around the world, for bail-ins. And what bail-ins means is, now that people are catching on to bailouts, that they're getting ripped off by bailing out the major institutions and banks, now they're moving to bail-in. And that means that the banks own your money. Not only are they going to charge you for depositing, but when you deposit, they own your money. You become an investor in that bank. And if they declare a financial emergency, then you will get your money back if you do at the end of the line after the derivatives holders. In other words, most likely never. So the banks is no longer a very safe place to keep your money. We'll talk about alternatives to that later on. Another example of the current trends is that the what they call the Grexit, the threat of the of Greece leaving the European Union, is has got a lot of people, of course, very nervous. A lot of people in Greece were excited that the new Cyprus regime has taken over, and they've promised to end austerity and so forth. And, you know, that sounds great. I hate what people are being subjected to in terms of the, you know, cutbacks on entitlements and so forth, to the degree to which people are dependent on that. But don't think that that's going to be an answer to the problem. The new government is basically a communist government that's going to simply make things even worse in the long run, as every communist government in history has over time. And in Greece, basically the federal government is now confiscating money from the local municipalities, and that money is going to the IMF. So it's not a healthy situation. Another sign is that so many nations are leaving the cabal banking system to whatever degree they can, and the dollar, the deals between China, Russia, Brazil, India, and so forth, where they're doing swaps for gold or actual barters in trade and so forth, doing whatever they can to avoid the dollar, which they see as weakening and on the verge of collapse. Then we've got things like the Jade Helm military maneuvers in 10 states in the West and Southwest, and they're activating of FEMA camps and moving military equipment into Walmart stores that have been shut down temporarily and so forth. Looking very suspicious. There's lots of reports on what this may or may not be, whether it's preparation for martial law or indoctrinating the people to be used to military on their streets. There's no way of knowing that for sure, but it's certainly not a healthy sign in these times. The New York Fed has also moved its offices to Chicago. I think most likely they see that as a little safer place to be in case of collapse. The U.S. Government has declared that people claiming individual sovereignty are now the number one terrorist threat, actually the number one threat to the government ahead of terrorism. Agenda 21 is moving along at an unfortunately very rapid clip to take over most of the property, move people into the cities and claim the resources for the government. And then China is in the process of reclaiming the area of the South China Sea. And Russia is participating in naval maneuvers in that area. And the U.S. has started to move naval ships into that area. And this is really very much about controlling the shipping lane. I think we would be a little nervous if there were a lot of Russian and Chinese ships coming into the Gulf of Mexico or along the coast of the of California or something like that. And anyway, that's one way that many of the powers that be are kind of threatening to move toward a World War III that could help the Western banking powers avoid a collapse, you know, establish martial law during a time of war and not have to answer to a lot of the problems that they've created. I don't think that that's going to happen, but it's certainly something we need to be very wary of. Okay, some other trends that are playing out, but behind closed doors. Many people, millions of people in the U.S. and elsewhere around the world are eager to find out what's going on in terms of the global currency reset and the promised release of humanitarian funds. Well, I hope that you're not holding your breath for that. Our sources tell us that there will be a reset of global currencies, but that it won't happen until it's safe for humanitarian funds to be released. Currently, we're still under the Federal Reserve system. The Federal Reserve runs SWIFT, International Money Transfer System, and there's just been numerous incidences of people trying to transfer major wealth around the world for humanitarian purposes and having it stalled or stolen. So there are significant initiatives in preparation to mitigate that. There's a new international money transfer system that is coming out of China, but really backed by the BRICS countries. And we're told publicly now that it's set to launch in September or October, but definitely by the end of the year. And our sources are telling us that it's actually already done and could be going online very soon. Also, once again, what we've been told is that until the yuan, which has become such a strong currency now and yet not internationally really recognized and accepted all over the world, it's not part of the IMF basket of currencies. And until it is, the Chinese and the BRICS countries are not so inclined to release humanitarian funds until there is a more universal system. Not under the control of the Western banking cabal. Another sign is that there's something called China Union Pay. It's an alternative to Visa and MasterCard. It's created in China, but they've got branches all over the world. One of their subsidiaries is International Union Pay. And there's already 150 countries accepting it. And this will allow, it's almost like a kind of an international Bitcoin on the credit card level, because it will allow circumvention of the Federal Reserve system, particularly in situations where the West is trying to control other countries by sanctions, such as in Russia and Iraq, Iran right now. Okay, the last one that I'll mention briefly, and then we'll go into a little more detail on it later, is the impending Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, and its sister in crime, the TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. Before going into that, let me just check on what kind of familiarity people have by bringing up a poll about the Trans-Pacific Partnership to see what kind of familiarity you have with it, and that'll tell me how deep to go in terms of discussing it. Many of you might have seen a blog that Kimberly and I did on that maybe 6 to 9 months ago. If you haven't, you can check it out at our website. Okay, so let's look at this poll. The question is, how do you view the Trans-Pacific Partnership? A, I don't know what it is. B, I know what it is, but I don't have an opinion. C, it will be helpful to free up trade among countries. That's a lot of what's being promised. D, it's an important step to liberate corporations from onerous government regulations. And C, it would be a dangerous takeover of sovereignty, rights, and the environment by the corporations. So please pick one of those, press submit, and we'll see what we've got.
Okay, looks like only a couple more people are in progress, so I'll give them a few more seconds before I close the poll.
Maybe we can put a link to our TPP blog in the chat window for later.
Yeah.
Okay, another 15 seconds. And there's the results.
Great.
Okay. Well, 20% no answer, 55% think that it would be a dangerous takeover of sovereignty rights and the environment by the corporations. So that'll save me a bunch of time in going over some of the details of this. But let's just talk for a minute about the TPP.
18% don't know what it is, so I think it's to really describe it even as an overview. And also, Goa, can you drop the link in?
I'm looking for that now. Yeah, working on it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So Amy Goodman did a wonderful interview with Julian Assange recently. You can check that out on the Democracy Now! Website. And Julian was talking about the TPP. The WikiLeaks had released four chapters of this agreement. And they're in the process of releasing another 19, I think, something like that. I mean, this is an agreement that started being negotiated in 2005 as the Trans-Pacific Strategic Economic Partnership Agreement. So here we are 10 years later, and the only people that have seen this agreement in the public are a few Congress people in the U.S. Who are only allowed to go into a room with no notes. They're allowed to look at the agreement, and then they're sworn to secrecy. They can't talk about it. They can't write it down. So what the heck would require that sort of behavior when the Congress people are supposed to be working for us and this trade agreement is supposed to be benefiting us? Well, it's obviously not that. It's the same as the New World Order. It's the same as the Agenda 21. It's the same as all of these major countries actually operating as corporations behind the scenes. It's a global takeover, but the powers that be learned, you know, years ago that if you try to invade people when you're outnumbered with through might of arms, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to have a lot of blowback. But if you can fool them into submission economically and through lying in the media, then before they know it, you know, you've actually got them where you want them. And Julian Assange, to boil it down in his interview, basically what he said is that the TPP deal isn't about trade, it's about corporate control. The TPP is really one of the kind of artworks of the Trilateral Commission, which was created by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski, and is one of the kind of three major publicly known but secret societies that has been planning the New World Order and operating toward it for quite a while. Let me give you a quote from Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was actually Obama's main foreign policy advisor when he also first came into office. I think he was Secretary of Defense under Carter, but he's been a Rothschild-Kissinger operative since day one. He said in 1969, he said, the nation state as a fundamental unit of man's organized life has ceased to be the principal creative force. International banks and multinational corporations are acting and planning in terms that are far in advance of the political concepts of the nation state. So those of you who remember the boardroom scene from the movie Network, where the guy who was doing the kind of whistleblowing on the TV was basically they closed the curtains and gave him a download on how the world really works. You know, look that up if you haven't seen it. But it's basically making this same point that the people who really want to control everybody in the world, they laugh behind closed doors at the notion of nation state, because they know that nation states are controlled by a very few in the government, but those few in the government are controlled by the bankers and the international corporations, as we laid out in the Follow the Money pyramid. So if you understand that, then you realize that the TPP is simply using the cover of government. The government is basically the enforcement arm. It's the media arm and the enforcement arm of the international bankers operating through the corporations in consolidating the resources of the world. So if you have any doubt about what Brzezinski is saying, here's another quote from David Rockefeller himself from 2003, from his memoirs. He said, "Some even believe we're part of a secret cabal, working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists, and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. If that is the charge, I stand guilty, and I am proud of it." So that's clear. It's very clear that these people are operating from the corporate point of view to consolidate their interests and to create basically a one world corporation with them in charge. Now, I am not a big fan of government, as you all know. I'm not in favor of some people having rights that other people don't have and then using that to take others' money and go off and wage wars and kidnap their kids to fight in them and you know, all of the crony capitalism and subsidies and all the stuff that we've talked about for years. However, when corporations, which are simply businesses that are sanctioned by and controlled by the governments, when those two go into collusion, the governments and the corporations, that's fascism. And that's really what we're talking about here. If we had international businesses which were accountable for their behavior, where the individuals were accountable, and they had to be transparent in terms of their transactions, and they weren't protected or subsidized by the the governments, then things like this fast tracking of the TPP and IP behind closed doors, it could never work. You know, the citizens would not allow it. And when it came out that the corporations were going to transcend national sovereignty in order to be able to sue nations, aka taxpayers paying their hard-earned money in to pay off the fines because corporations are suing the nations for doing things like trying to protect workers and trying to protect the environment, all those bothersome little things that get in the way of corporate profits, that the TPP will authorize countries to sue, I mean corporations, to successfully sue the government for, and that you and I will need to pay for, and to sue them in international courts set up by and working for the corporations themselves. So it really is basically a global test of our awareness. You know, how much do we understand? How much are we willing to put up with? Because if people don't understand this and are willing to put up with it, we'll very quickly find ourselves in an international corporation with NATO as its enforcement arm and all of us beholden to the international bankers. And that'll all be, you know, illegal, and we'll be paying taxes for it to the World Bank. Okay, one final quote just to bring this point home, because it's so important now. This is from Henry Kissinger in 1991. And this has to do with things like Jade Helm and the FEMA camps and the Patriot Act, which is now being replaced by the USA Freedom Act. But if you read it closely, it's just, you know, the wolf has put on a different sheep's clothing and so forth. Kissinger said, "Today, America would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow, they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told that there were an outside threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated, that threatened their very existence. It is then that all peoples of the world will plead to deliver them from this evil. The one thing every man fears is the unknown. When presented with this scenario, individual rights will be willingly relinquished for the guarantee of their well-being granted to them by the world government. Henry Kissinger in 1991. So those three quotes kind of tell you the agenda of the New World Order pretty clearly. Okay, let's move on to what's likely now. So we follow, as we said in our last blog, we put up a list of over 70 different sources that we follow pretty closely. And a lot of the economic pundits that I respect the most are almost in unison now, predicting an even greater economic collapse coming in potentially this fall. And this includes Peter Schiff, Gerald Celente, Max Keiser, Tyler Durden of Zero Hedge, Jim Rickards, Jim Willey, Ron Paul, Martin Armstrong, and even Catherine Austin Fitz, who's been a close colleague of ours and has not really talked much about collapse. She's been much more speaking in terms of a slow burn. She was on a radio program recently talking about how a major turning point could be coming this fall. And I want to cite a few of some of her data, because I think it's really useful in assessing the situation for the rest of us. What she's really talking about is the whole debt dynamic that most people don't really sufficiently understand. She pointed out that 39 countries have a greater than 100% debt to GDP ratio. In other words, they're broke. And the USA is one of them with a 230% debt to gross domestic product ratio. What she's worried about is the level of violence going up in response to this. And I think that could be a lot of what Jade Helm is about, is just preparing for that kind of violence in response to the collapse. She's predicting that the bull market in bonds is going to end. It could plateau or it could actually fall. The big banks, she's pointing out, have shifted the sovereign, they've been shifting their debt into the sovereign governments who are already in financial collapse. So the banks now have all these huge revenues. They were bailed out by the people, you know, on behalf of the governments, which are in the process of collapsing. What she's more worried about is perpetual entrapment than collapse. She says they can harvest our future for a while and make money on it. Now, she calls it the financial coup d'etat, where equity is going into private hands and liabilities are being laid on the backs of nations, which is just a code word for taxpayers. So she's saying that a major turning point looks like it's coming this fall, that SDRs, the special drawing rights, which is basically the new international currency from the IMF, the SDRs seem to be coming to a head. And when posed the question, are we headed toward collapse or war? She said, well, it could be either of those, but there is also change. And she said she sees the change coming on a decentralized basis. And so do we. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I'm going to talk about potential scenarios and what to do about all this in a minute. But first, I want to take our final poll. So if you could put that up, Goa. This poll, the question here is, what preparations, if any, have you been making for possible changes in the economy? And in this particular poll, you're not limited to one. So just check any box next to some sort of preparation that you have been making. So here's possible preparations. None, investing in the market, buying bonds, storing extra food and seeds, making sure extra cash is on hand in case the banks are closed, getting out of debt as much as possible, taking steps to enhance the security of myself, my family, and my property, whatever that means to you. investing in precious metals, investing in foreign or other alternative currencies such as Bitcoin. Intentionally creating supportive community with my neighbors. And finally, creating alternative ways of communicating in case of an internet or phone line shutdown. So please mark any of those that are relevant to what you have been doing and hit submit. Some people, by the way, may not have the capability on their mobile device or something like that to answer. That may be the reason why we've had a fairly high no answer number.
Yeah, it seems to be about the same number of folks.
Yeah.
Looks like we've got six more still in progress, so we'll let those finish.
Now, for those of you who are not in the U.S., The question is still the same. So many of the issues are exactly the same because almost every country in the world is currently part of the Rothschild-Rockefeller central banking system, and the suppression, the deception has been virtually identical in most countries around the world, as you probably know. Okay, how are we doing? Go on.
There's 6 seconds, then I can post the results. Okay.
Okay. So it looks like a third to a half of the people who are able to respond have been taking significant steps to be prepared. I really salute you for that. You know, it's, you know, your neighbors and your family can think you're crazy. And hopefully it's one of these things where you're preparing for something you hope never happens, so that you hope you end up being wrong about the need for preparing. But the better prepared you are, we find the more relaxed you can be and the more you can put your time into helping others and to taking steps to keep all of this from happening. Okay, so let's move on to, let's talk for a moment about what can we do about these types of situations. Some of the above steps, obviously, people are doing already. We highly recommend that you do whatever you can to empower local economies and local systemic communities. Not just that you can say hi to your neighbor, but that if you've got some awake neighbors, if they're not, you wake them up. If they are awake already, just, you know, have a gathering where you talk about the possibility of tribulations in the U.S. or whatever country you're in, and just get to know each other and share phone numbers and kind of get a sense of how you would as a community handle breakdowns in communication or food availability or water. You know, we've been doing this in our local community here, and it's very exciting actually to see what kind of a liberating and empowering bond it creates, and how many people, you know, have individual wells, or they've been storing food, or they're growing food, or have access to others who are. Anyway, it's just a relief as you start to take action. The next one we recommend is educate. Just do everything you can with whatever time you have to write about these things, speak about these things, and to help others wake up and speak up also, because education is the key thing. Once people have enough information, then they can, they've got the creativity and initiative to take whatever actions they can, whether it's protesting or petitions or speaking to their politicians, none of which are my favorites, but they all play a part in this, you know, messy process of, you know, reform and transformation of our systems. And most especially, we recommend build alternative systems. As these old systems are crumbling, which they are, the financial system, the media system, the educational system, the infrastructures, they're all crumbling. The evidence is clear now. But everywhere we go, we see people who are creating alternative currencies, alternative schools, alternative financial mechanisms, alternative media, new ways to access energy, to alternative health approaches, other ways of communicating and creating either local or our independent eco-communities. So throughout history, when regimes have failed, and they've never failed on this global scale before, but when they've failed, they've always been replaced by the next authoritarian regime. So to the degree to which we've got viable alternatives on the table, growing already and in communication with each other, and that's what the Thrive Movement is about. It's what the New Earth Nation and the Resonance Project and the Shift Project and so many movements and projects around the world are creating these alternatives, and more we're linking together, even if we don't agree on everything, we're linking together in support in creating alternative, healthy lifestyles that everybody can access. Okay, so I said before, a lot of people ask me, how in the heck can you feel hopeful given all the bad news that you process in your research? Well, it's a good question, but it's mitigated hugely by all the good news that I get to process and by the thousands and thousands of people that we hear from who are doing fantastic things that are inspiring us, where they're taking on all the major issues of the world and learning the strategies and the principles that are actually working. But let me list for you the five things which give me the most hope right now. And the first is that I have noticed in my endeavors with Thrive that I have had five core kind of deepest hopes or prayers or requests of the universe, whatever you want to call them. What I found myself just speaking to the universe intensely inside myself about for a year. And I find that one after another, they're being answered despite the quarrels of my rational mind, which didn't see any way a lot of them could happen. So let me review that for you. The first one was, my prayer was that we would remain safe and under the radar while we got the Thrive movie out to the world. Clearly that happened. My second one was that the internet would remain open long enough for all of these, this information and principles and solutions and so forth to be spread around the world. And so far, amazingly enough, that has happened despite hundreds of attempts just within the U.S. alone to shut down, take over, censor, or control the internet. So that happened too, and especially thanks to groups like Anonymous, who have just been dedicated all over the world to keeping the information sources open. My next one was my biggest stretch, and that was that there would be some force, which I did not know about at the time, that would be equally powerful, even more powerful, and more humanitarily oriented than the Rothschild banking cabal. And I didn't know of anything like that. But then a few years ago, we started getting contacted by people who told us about the Asian dragon families, you know, the elders and their troves of wealth, and how most of the countries of the world were actually indebted to them. And that they supposedly had a deep spiritual base and were interested in empowering people around the world, which is what we're interested in. So we've been researching this intensely for years. We've reported on it in various blogs and public events and so forth. And we have had increasingly direct contact with representatives from these families. And I now can confidently say that this is real. There's still a lot we need to learn about them, and yet their existence, the existence of their wealth, the existence of the people themselves, and a lot of that we've been learning about their intentions is tremendously positive and hopeful. And that's one reason why they have contacted us, because they recognize what we have been exposing through Thrive and what we've been encouraging in terms of a whole systems global solutions model. So we've been in ongoing communication with them, as well as other sources of financial resources around the world who actually really want to see the transformation take place. So that was my third prayer that I now have tremendous hope for and I'm working hard on. The next one was that we would ultimately end up being in a position where we and others like us would have the privilege of directing a lot of those funds into the breast projects that we've been researching for over a decade all over the world, projects in energy, projects in health, in water purification, in decontamination, in justice projects, environmental projects, and so forth. And more, it looks like we and others with a similar orientation to us will have that opportunity. And finally, my last prayer was that Thrive would hopefully have a seat at the table with people that influential to really be in deep ongoing discussion, sharing worldview differences and worldview compatibilities, and really exploring the absolutely vital issues of true free market and liberty economics and justice issues that are spreading so rapidly now throughout the world. And the proof is in that the old authoritarian control systems don't work. Socialism, communism, fascism have been a complete disaster. So it looks like that too is now beginning to be an opportunity for us and for other like-minded people. So that gives me tremendous hope. That's number one. Number two is that the reforms that I'm seeing through the BRICS countries fit into what I would refer to as, from our three-stage solution strategy from the Thrive movie, as stage one solutions, where they're trying to bring as much integrity as possible to the current systems, even using the current structures of international institutions and so forth, but reforming them to actually work for the benefit of people rather than to try to dominate and control people. So we're bringing as much integrity as possible to these systems in the process of shrinking government and protecting individual rights. That gives me a lot of hope. Stage number three in what gives me hope is what the Illuminati call the X factor. I've seen transcripts and talked to refugees from Illuminati enclaves who talked about how these controllers talk behind the scenes, and they talk about in frustration that no matter how much money or deception or force they use, there's this X factor that keeps breaking up the concrete and you know, coming up in sprouts between the cracks. And it's they don't know what to call it other than the X factor, but I think you and I would call it the truth. We would call it the life force. We would call it love. You know, we would call it human beings' natural inclination to collaborate and take care of one another and to try to create a world where everyone can thrive. And what I'm seeing, especially with the internet staying open, is that people are waking up. The new world order is collapsing, and the X factor will have its day. It is already. And all of you are a key part of that. My fourth of the five is my research into viable projects, not only through our Thrive Connect projects, but similar initiatives all over the world where people have been traveling around and collecting the projects that have the most promise, where they've got already working devices, where they've got a proven track record for effectiveness and integrity, where they're working on projects that are absolute breakthroughs, but they also can be rapidly scalable to a global level. The spread of that whole paradigm combined with the imminent movement of significant funds into those projects is one of the most hopeful things I can possibly imagine. And it's very real for me now. We'll be keeping you up to date on the progress of that. And finally, the whole ET interdimensional entity aspect of this, whether you believe in this or not, I've seen such overwhelming evidence that it gives me a lot of hope, not that I'm holding my breath for, not that I'm depending on or assuming, but that is tremendously encouraging to me because so many different species seem to be visiting this planet, have for a long time, without taking us over. And many, many of those species seem to be demonstrating that they have our best interests in mind. So we can align with their support if it honors our sovereignty in ways that I think is already helping to rescue us as we take the actions ourselves. Okay, so one more thing just to wrap up my download so we can open this up to the discussion, which we most look forward to, is I want to quickly review the scenarios that we have previously shared in terms of potential outcomes that we see, especially dependent on the behavior of the so-called leaders of the U.S. government and corporations right now. Because the elders of the Asian families really seem to be offering a soft landing for a U.S. and the way out for the whole planet in terms of debt forgiveness, in terms of funding of projects, in terms of basically a global reboot in a humanitarian direction. So scenario A, plan A that we've talked about before is the U.S. goes along with the 2010 reforms. It goes along with the global asset-backed systems that are coming in now and cooperates with the BRICS countries. I see that really could happen. I actually think that it will, but there's no guarantee. If they don't, we move into plan B, where the U.S. continues to operate, trying to undermine the BRICS countries, trying to resist the financial reforms, and that could move us into a economic collapse, at least in the U.S., potential police state, martial law, all of that type of thing. Plan C is that we go forward. The U.S. goes forward without the assistance of the elders, but we move into some sort of cabal dominance based on the Bank of International Settlements, using the SDR as the new global currency. And frankly, I don't think that can happen anymore, given the indebtedness of the U.S. To China, Japan, and other countries, given the strength of the BRICS initiative and the alliance and all the alternatives that they're creating, representing the majority of both the population and the GDP of the world, and even countries like the UK and Germany going along with this system now, I think the writing is on the wall, and I just hope it's a peaceful transition to global partnership rather than this dominance of the U.S. Hegemony of the banking system and so forth. Plan D is that we go forward. Plan D is that we go forward without the elders, but China moves into a position of dominance the way the U.S. Has been for the last 70 to 100 years. I also don't think that's going to happen, even though we need to be wary of it, especially because of the strength of the other countries in the BRICS nations, with Russia and India and Brazil having million-man armies and some of them having nuclear weapons and so forth. I think that the BRICS countries are buying us multiple decades of more safety while we work out what are the principles and strategies by which the whole world can become one family, but without being dominated by any type of patriarchy or financial or military dominance. And then plan E is when we cooperate with the extraterrestrials and with the interdimensional beings as well. And I think that no matter what the other scenarios are, I think that that one is proceeding already and will continue to be successful. And finally, what we call Plan U is the one that comes from whatever you decide you want the future to be and you take action to do. Because each of you doing that, just like the global economy, is not some, it will never work as a centralized command and control system. A global economy is billions of people taking individual voluntary actions and creating a healthy nonviolent economy. The global leadership scenario is really where we are each the leaders by taking action that does not violate anyone, but does align with natural principles so that everybody can thrive. Okay, well, thanks for sitting through my major download. I hope that that was useful. Let's open it up now to any comments or questions that people have, and we'll have about an hour to discuss those.
Great. And maybe, Goa, why don't you bring up Jennifer Larkin, who has a question. I just want to make two comments before we go there. Thank you, Foster, for the download. I wanted to say the thing about community, because clearly a lot of people aren't where you can grow food. But it's one of the things that is the most transpolitical things you can do, because you'll really find that there's nobody who's feeling great about the state of the world. It doesn't matter what your political or apolitical perspective. Clearly things are not going well. And so around that, you can form a relationship, and it's like, you know, look, there's a lot of evidence that things are kind of heating up. And if they do, what would we want to do together? So that it's just a way to kind of have a dialogue that you don't have to get into what you disagree about. And instead, you can focus on the fact that, you know, of all the places to be on the planet, you happen to be neighbors in this particular time in history, and really focus on developing those relations. So anyway, just wanted to say that. Great. Jennifer, thank you for joining us.
Hi. Do you hear me, Ori?
Yeah.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. So I take my question in, but I was really interested. There's so many, you know, expert downloads of potential, you know, flux in which currency is going to take domination, where to put your money, what space. And it's really hard to discern what to choose. And I work with a large group of people, you know, empowering them in a consciousness setting. And although I, you know, give them a lot of resources to investigate themselves, that choice point is still very murky. So I just was listening to explore that further.
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question, which a lot of people are needing to face right now. And
can you repeat it for anyone who couldn't understand?
Sure. The sound was a little distorted. The question that Jennifer wrote in was, if possible, could you speak to where the safest place to keep money is during this time of great transition, and what currency would be the safest bet? Well, from my reflections on this, I noticed throughout history that the species that tend to go extinct are the ones that over-specialize. So I recommend a broad and diversified strategy to whatever degree people can. Specifically, if people want to keep something in the stock market, I don't think it's a bad thing to do. If you're investing in the types of things that are so huge that they will be apt to survive significant roller coasters and still come out the other side, and finding investments like that, like blue chip stocks that have products and behaviors that you believe in, is a challenge, but it's doable. Another one is to invest in precious metals, because for the last 5,000 years, at least, of human history, it's been by far the most reliable type of money as currency and as a storehouse of wealth and so forth. I never recommend to anyone that they buy what they call paper metal, because those are just certificates saying that somebody is holding your gold for you somewhere. And it's now been clearly established, and it's one of the things that, that banks have been fined for, is that they sell those same certificates many times over. So it's basically become fiat gold, where they make money off the selling of this gold, but you don't actually have it. And I have known people who've gone to Switzerland, for instance, trying to reclaim it and been told, no, I'm sorry, you know, you can't do that. So I recommend that people get in their personal possession, and then, you know, hide it very carefully where you can access it, but others don't know where it is. Another thing that is becoming more and more a wise alternative is to invest in other currencies and even in other countries. In case funds are confiscated, we've seen documentation that was sent out to banks in the U.S. about being prepared for the bankers to be prepared in case of economic collapse to go into the safe deposit box and take out any gold and guns that they find. So that means they're not only taking your guns, they're taking your gold, and then we've already established earlier that they're taking your deposits. So, but there are places that you can buy international currency and either hold it in your personal possession or hold it in foreign accounts. I think particularly the yuan and the rupee and the ruble, I think, are all set for a significant rise. A lot of people have invested in the dinar and the dong. I think that the dong is a substantial one because it's so overdue for a reset of that currency. And it's already internationally traded. The dinar is a little more sketchy. Our sources tell us that there will be a revaluation, but it could be a while, you know, based on the criteria that I mentioned before, and that there's a lot of counterfeit dinar out there. And I know that Sterling Currency Group, which has been a major seller of dinar in the United States and elsewhere, was just raided 2 days ago by the FBI. And we're still in the process of trying to find out whether that was an illegal kind of shutdown or whether they were actually doing unethical practices that they're getting caught for. So I think that those investments can be of value also. Real estate is the best one of all, but you know, majority of people in the world can't own real estate if it's illiquid, and most people are just struggling to pay their rent, much less pay off their mortgage. But to whatever degree people can get out of debt and actually own the places where they live, and then invest in the storehouses of food and water and so forth, just a broad spectrum of those in a balance that feels good to you is what I personally recommend.
Can you hear me better if I talk on the phone?
I think it's about the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, so when you're investing in currency, how do you circumvent the problem that you suggested with gold, where it's just a paper certificate saying that you've invested in the currency? Because there's lots of, you know, avenues to invest in currency, you know, online and other things. So, you know, reputable sources where you know you're actually purchasing something real.
Well, I'm not an expert in that at all, so I won't claim any expertise there. I do have friends who have invested in foreign currencies like the yuan and hold it in their personal bank accounts, multi-currency accounts that they've created in other countries. Because they actually having them in your bank account, because obviously any bank can just decide, okay, I'm going to take your money. But there are countries that I think are a lot safer than the U.S. right now in terms of actually being able to keep your deposits safe. But I think you're on your own in terms of, you can ask at reputable banks and ask them, you know, how to invest in foreign currencies.
Yeah, one of the things also I just want to mention, like keeping the bank out of certain deals, like someone in our network who has the Note Queen Capital Funding, Don Rickabaugh, she's got a fabulous system for working out ways to exchange real estate with the banks not involved, and just sort of, you know, capitalizing on building community through the financial transactions. I know like Catherine Austin Fitz had that, I don't know where it's at, but the notion that, you know, if you have credit card debt and someone else has money to invest somewhere, that you get rid of the bank and the person with the money to invest builds relationship with their neighbor who's got credit card debt. And instead of 17% or whatever they're paying, if they pay 5%, that would be a great investment for the person with money to invest. But all of these ways to get out of working with the banks and instead building relationships that strengthen community are really significant. And she's been at it in her community. And I think that so it's the Note Queen. And it's she's just got a great website and a way to understand more about it.
I also recommend to people that if they can afford to, that that Bitcoin or Litecoin or other alternative currencies like that, not to depend on, and not really as a speculation, but just as an alternative. I mean, it could end up being a healthy speculation, but it's more like gambling in that way. But as we're traveling around the world, we're just seeing it catch on in more and more countries. So I think it's going to be very difficult to shut all those down.
Yeah. So we have someone else online to come up.
Thank you for your question, Jennifer.
Thank you very much. And also, Fox, will you please repeat the question when it comes in just to make sure everybody can hear it?
Sure.
So let's see. Who did we? Judith Rankin, is that who's coming on now?
Baby. They want me to talk. How do I do this?
We can hear you, Judith.
All right.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And if you have a camera, if you have a camera, we'd love to see you.
I have my camera on my iPad, but I'm on my computer right now.
Okay.
I'm very concerned about the military activities that are going to be taking place starting June or July. The Jade Helm, I think is their name of it. And I'm not from this country. I come from South America, Colombia, and I know what it is to live in a country that's basically taken over by the military. So I'm wondering if it's time to go somewhere else, or the U.S. is going to be it's going to be the way it has been, and it's safe to be here for the next few years or so.
Yeah. Well, I made a few comments previously about Jade Helm, but let me add in a little more because I know people are understandably concerned about that. First of all, on the plus side, I have friends who either are or have been in the military and National Guard and so forth who tell me that these exercises take place every 5 years. And so the fact that one is taking place while we're in the current state that we are is not necessarily a unique and critical sign of bad news. Secondly, I follow a lot of the sites that cover this, and another piece of good news is that the various militias around the country are very, very tuned into this, and they have sent representatives to these states to monitor the activities of the military as they're doing this Jade Helm exercise. It's supposed to launch in July, but they're really moving a lot of equipment and a lot of people already. There have been a number of public hearings, particularly in Texas, where the military has been confronted about these practices of doing all these operations in public view, and their answers have not been very satisfactory. But I would say that they have really been put on notice, and if they intended Jade Helm to be one of these exercises, like what was going on the morning of 9/11 that turned into the real deal, what was going on in England, in London at 7/11, and that turned into a live operation. It happened with the Boston bombing. It happened with the American troops were doing something down at the bottom of Florida when the when the Haiti earthquake took place, very suspiciously. And then, of course, the troops were moved right across the ocean gap there and immediately took over the airport and so forth. So if the powers that would like to be were using this as preparation for a false flag event where they could simply institute martial law and catch people sleeping, I don't think that's possible anymore. And I know that the Veterans Today website at least has come out with a number of their authors saying that they feel that threat has been mitigated now. So I think we need to be really aware and watch them. If they're in your communities, I would treat them very well, but look them directly in the eye and let them know how you feel about having these sorts of operations going on, especially for someone like you, Judith. And I have other friends from Russia, Poland, and other countries who've lived through this type of thing for real. Let them know that we are on our toes and not willing to have anything like that happen.
Thank you very much, Pastor.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Judith. Thanks for your question.
Whoever else is speaking, if you can be muted, that would be super helpful. Do we know who that is, Goa?
I think that was on Judith's microphone.
Okay, great. Well, you know, one of the things I just wanted to add
we're hearing one more person.
Yeah. You know, awareness is a real currency here, because when you look at what's happened, for example, with trying to shut down the internet and control it, it's only because of people's awareness that that's been mitigated. And the same thing is essentially true of these false flags. It's only by people publicizing it in advance and being aware that it no longer works. So, you know, in addition to being practical with, you know, seeds and the things that people actually need, you know, as currency, the other one is really your awareness. So I think that's the whole significance, really, as I see it, of the, you know, people talking about the JFK assassination and 9/11 and the TPP. Like, these are all on a trajectory of how much will people just tolerate without being awake to what's going on? And so if you do get it, or you go, well, wait a minute, but this TPP, this is, you know, this looks like it's something that, in fact, if it means that corporations can then sue governments and that taxpayers are the ones who are going to have to now pay the corporations, if they think governments are interfering in the corporate profit, then something's wrong with that. And I'm going to speak out about it. And I'm going to not just sit back and go, well, maybe what they're saying is true. That awareness and that willingness to say something is as powerful as any investment that we're ever going to make, because it's the thing that's going to mitigate some of this from happening. And that's where building local community is all about. What it's all about, I think, is having these conversations with each other. So anyway, okay. Maureen Bob O'Connor, Maine Bob.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's see if this works. Yes, this is a great program, and I thank you very much for what you've done. And what I'm really interested in knowing is, I'm living on.
Am I doing too echo?
Sounds good.
Maybe that works.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Now you can hear her.
Okay. So my question. I'm hearing myself too much. I'm going to take my things out. I've got a really nice property, a nice place that I live, but I'm sharing this with the bank in terms of the mortgage and so forth. And really, I'm interested in knowing, is it time to try to totally get out of debt, which would take a long period of time, or work on some kind of refinance to make that fixed rate interest, that kind of thing? Or is it time to just fix everything up, sell it, become a nomad, and just, you know, find the next place? And it's kind of a interesting thing, because we've also done some nice things in the community that we're working towards. And I'm really interested in knowing what would be recommended with this financial thing. In other words, going into a little more debt to fix things up, you know, and then maybe there's debt forgiveness sometime on the other side of this. I don't know. So I'm interested in your insights.
No, I appreciate the question, and I've heard, you know, good arguments on all sides of this one. And Kimberly and I were talking recently with this woman, Dawn, that she just mentioned before, the note queen, about this very issue, because she's so involved in that particular area, and we're not. And if I'm representing her correctly, her view, and I agree with it, is that it's not a good time to go into more debt. The more of a viable claim that you can make to your shelter at this particular time, the better off you're going to be apt to be. I think it's the worst time possible to become a nomad. I think you want a shelter over your head that you can say, this is mine, and where the neighbors know you and where you can come to each other's assistance, because you know, if you're just wandering out there, you know, Mad Max style, I think you're going to be in trouble. You know, even in Mad Max, they all collect into communities, you know, for self-protection. Yeah. So, some people have argued, okay, well, if we're going to go into a runaway inflation, then it's going to be easier to pay off my debt when the dollars are worth less. And I can see, you know, one could gamble on that and make it possibly win on it. But I still think that getting as much out of debt as you can afford to and being as secure as you can in your community is the best advice I could give.
Well, thank you.
Right.
One other quick question. I've really been intrigued by Bernie Sanders, and I just kind of wondered, you know, he's a democratic socialist, but I love what he's saying, and I just wondered, you know, should I pay attention to that, or is that just, you know, nice that's out there?
Well, I love Bernie. He's such an honest character. He's just, I used to live, you know, up east, and he just, well, as you do, you know, he just personifies you guys in terms of just kind of salt of the earth. He's telling you the truth. He's no different on camera in Congress than he would be sitting over a cup of tea. And I think that he's really one of the few guys out there who's totally willing to tell truth to power. So I don't think he has a chance of getting elected any more than, you know, Dennis Kucinich or Ron Paul did in this current, you know, two-party, you know, puppet sham. But I think he's bringing a lot of important issues to bear. In my last blog, well, our last event where we were talking about beyond right and left, I said that I really review a lot of right and left literature, as well as libertarian literature, because they each do a good job of taking down the, you know, exposing the weaknesses of the others. And Bernie does a great job of exposing the a lot of the flaws of the right, which I agree with. But I would never see my, oh, I don't even vote, but I would if I did, I would not vote. I can't see myself voting for a socialist, because I know how that's turned out in history. So he sounds great when he's complaining, but when he's proposing solutions, it's the same old socialism that we saw in Italy, in Russia, in China, in Chile, that always leads to, you know, it's the socialism is a slippery slope into communism, and the communism is a surefire recipe for murdering millions of one's own citizens, and then trying to expand the empire around the world. So, you know, the jury's already in on all of these authoritarian attempts to rule. So I wish that conversation would take place, but it's really not allowed in the mainstream media, because they are an arm for the very, you know, corporatocracy, which wants people to think that they have some say in what's going on by casting a ballot.
All right. Thank you
so
much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Lined up here. So, Goa, can you bring on, is it Melody who's next, or?
Yes.
All right, Melody. Thanks you all for submitting these thoughtful questions and being so succinct. It makes it great for us to be able to interact with you.
Can you see me?
Yeah, we can hear
Hi.
You.
I can hear you. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I can hear you. I can't see you. Do you have a camera?
I do. I can. It's on, I think.
Click on the camera icon
anyway,
next to your name.
Thank you so much for what you do. I really appreciate it. I have a question. Do you know, is it better to have your money in a bank or a credit union? Does it make a difference?
I'll let Kimberly address that because she's really the one who introduced me to credit unions years ago.
There are limits in what a credit union can do compared to what a bank can do. But in terms of empowering your local community, a credit union has to, in my understanding, we live next door to someone who works in a credit union here, and is that the credit unions have to invest and represent the local interests, and the banks, local banks can choose varying percentages of doing that. So in terms of empowering your community, I think credit unions are great in terms, which is a huge thing towards safety. As far as all that they can do, you know, international transfers and other things, I can't remember. I'm not super fresh on the differences. But so in terms of, in one regard, it's great. And otherwise, I mean, to me, the local bank and local credit union, whichever one works better in your area. And we have a whole thing on our website at thrivemovement.com for the questions to ask a local bank or credit union. And I would suggest, you know, we'll drop, I'll make sure we put a link to that in the comment section on the subscriber portal for this event page, because the questions really matter. And then you can determine which local bank and or credit union is best in your area, because my guess is that it would vary from area to area. But the main thing is that anytime you can keep the money in your local community, it's a huge service, because that fractional reserve just means that they're able to make those loans within your community instead of taking the money right out of it. So I don't know for sure, but I will put a link to the questions that will help you determine it area by area.
Melody, while we've got you, while we've got you on, I saw that you put in the Q&A window the notice that Jade Helm had launched in Flint, Michigan yesterday. I didn't know that. Can you say more about that?
Yes. So my mother lives there. I'm in Phoenix, and she called me yesterday. And fortunately, I have been telling my mother about all these things that are going on. She's 79 years old. And so she called me and said that there had been some explosions and that she thought it was the militia. And I said, was it the militia or was it the military? So I looked it up online. It is, you can look it up online, but yes, they there was a newsreel on it. They did start it. They gave them 3 hours warning. People were terrified. There were explosions. And they were interviewing people. And then they were interviewing, I think it was like the local sheriff, and they were saying things like, well, we didn't want to give them too much warning because we didn't want people showing up, and we, you know, and we don't want to give the enemies our secret.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, who are the enemies?
Right.
The citizens?
Right. That's,
well, thank you for that notice. We will look up, we will look that up and follow that. I spent a fair amount of time in Michigan, and I'll tell you, they wouldn't want to tangle with the Michigan militia. So if,
no,
if something is coming public, I'm glad it's happening in Michigan.
Yeah, and you know, you kind of wonder what, maybe that's why they started there. But they said they were going to be there another 10 days with the training sessions.
Hmm. All right, good. Well, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All kinds of good questions.
Kimberly, I'd like to jump in for just a second because I saw a question that I think this would be a good time to bring in. This is from Michael Spies. And maybe you can bring him on while I'm reading his question. He says, investing in precious metals is only a system reload. Don't you think that investments in alternative projects such as free energy, free media, nutrition, health, and complementary currencies would now be advantageous to create a thriving society? I think it's a fabulous question and statement, which I totally agree with. And if anybody has any extra cash to be investing in something like that, I think Michael's right on the money with that. Michael, are you there? Do you want to say a little more about that? make sure that the microphone and the camera icons next to your name in the participants list is clicked.
Yeah, I've unmuted him. Michael, are you there? Maybe
well,
not.
I want to just say something in response to that. Foster and I are really focusing now a huge amount on getting the money to fund the projects that we've talked about in Thrive Connect. And, you know, this X factor that Foster talked about in hopefulness, for me, human innovation and creativity is what gives me hope. And as long as people are in debt and just working like crazy to survive, whether it's to get their food, to get clean water, or just working at all these jobs to basically pay the rent or mortgage, it keeps that human innovation and creativity from being able to be unleashed. So we're really focusing now on getting the money into these projects. And that is our primary goal and intention with the rest of our lives, is to be able to get just what you're talking about, Michael, funded, so that these things can really move forward in freeing people up in their time. And I think the combination of awareness with access to energy and decontamination, of course, and water purification, and these basic things that will free up people all over the world and really do, you know, what we said in Thrive, that's what's going to shift the geopolitical dynamic on this planet faster than anything else. And so we're really 100% for that. And we, you know, there are a lot of people who don't have extra money to invest, but those who do, that the Thrive Connect project is really our primary passion and focus right now to make that happen. So you can know that that's where we're putting our attention. And that's what we're personally using this information as we inform ourselves to identify the people and the projects that we think will be the most leveraged actions to shift things. Because like Foster was saying, when the alternatives exist, then as the old system crumbles, these new ones are there to rise. So that's really what we're putting our attention to. So I appreciate you bringing that up a lot. All right.
Well, I'm sorry we couldn't access Michael, but we need to move on.
All right. So
David is next.
All right, David.
Can you hear me, Kimberly?
Yes.
Sorry, I don't have my camera on. my question was about one of your suggestions about alternative forms of communication.
Yeah.
So, I know a little bit about what's going on in China. You know, they heavily filter and firewall the internet there. It's not wide open like we have. So is there any alternative?
Well, I think it's two different questions. One is ongoing means of communication like alternative internet. The other is, in case of collapse or something like that, how can we communicate with each other? And I know that when the Arab Spring started in Egypt and they shut down Twitter, within 12 hours, I received three different emails from people around the world with a list of over 20 workarounds where people could still communicate with each other without using Twitter or the traditional internet. I don't have expertise in that area. I would invite Goa, who's on the call, who's hosting this call and is much more technically savvy than I am. Goa, do you have any input on that one?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it really depends on sort of the situation at hand. I mean, you could kind of take it as what happens if my local community or my telephones go down. You know, do I have a backup satellite phone or something like that? Or in these instances where, you know, a certain community is going to be locked down, but then, you know, organically there'll be alternatives that will spring up and then be quickly communicated or, you know, promulgated about that. So it's kind of hard to anticipate, you know, as these things really do kind of, you know, adjust and fix themselves depending on what's happening. it's, I think, also more a case of just sort of being aware that that will happen and trying to be as connected as you can be with as many different mediums as you can, be it internet and phone and voice and some of the older traditional ones, in case something like that happens, if that helps.
I would also add in, you know, I would echo what Goa said. If you need to communicate long distances, you might look into satellite phones for more local situations. I know that we keep walkie-talkies and encourage neighbors to have walkie-talkies, and also battery-operated radios. In fact, we've got some radios that you can get online where you don't even need to have charged batteries. You can just shake it, and it'll generate enough energy that you can turn on your radio to get, like, emergency stations, something like that.
Okay. Maybe I'll do a little research on my own, Foster, on what some people have been doing in disaster relief and that sort of thing.
That would be great. And please let us know and we can post it.
Okay.
Yeah. Super helpful. It was interesting. One of the things for me about, you know, the news getting, I mean, like the internet being filtered like in China and all that, I really find that in America, the news, if you only plugged into mainstream news, you would be as disadvantaged as if you were in China. These days, the mainstream news is so controlled that you just simply have to go out of your way to tune in to independent sources in order to get a bigger picture. And then ideally, differing opinions so that you're challenged to think for yourself and see what it is you think is going on. All right, thank you. So we have lots more still in the queue. These are really good questions.
Okay, next up is going to be Sky, moving her up.
Sky, you had a lot of different things, and that we have so many people asking questions. How about I wanted you to address some of the stuff about what you thought were good alternatives to currency that you or copper wire and farming tools and things like that.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Seeds, farming equipment, things as simple as shovels and rakes, any kind of medical equipment, anything that people are going to need would be, I think, better than investing in different forms of currency. If everything falls apart, then people are still going to eat. They're still going to need medical care. They're going to need ways to grow their own food. So.
Yeah. I think that's great. Also, and you were asking about a ham radio also, which I think is a good idea.
Yeah, ham radio is great too, but you need some expertise and a license to operate it.
Okay, I didn't know that. Is that what truckers use to communicate with each other? Is that also a ham radio?
No, I don't think that's a ham radio. Maybe they tune into those channels, but I this is just beyond my expertise. You know, there's certain frequencies that are owned by certain types of communication networks, and I'm sure if you go on any survival site, you know, preparation site, and they'll have that information, but I'm not an expert on that at all.
Okay. Thank you.
I just wondered okay.
Actually, I think you're right about the trekkers. I think from the movie, the Wild, I think she used a ham radio to communicate there.
Yeah.
But she'd obviously learned how to do it.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Sky. There's so much coming in that's good and interesting here. So bring up the next question, Goa, and then I'm just going to read another one, too, from someone who's already been up, and then we'll keep going. All right.
Okay. Tom Compton's next. Tom, are you there?
Hello. Yeah. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I was just I watched the Money Masters several times, and was in the last, you know, 6 months ago, the financial discussion, and you guys never mentioned Bill Still and his idea of issuing our own currency that's, as I understand it, debt-free. It just whatever it costs us to print the money is how much it costs us to have that currency for the economy. And just your thoughts about that, or why you haven't mentioned that as a solution, or
yeah, I'm glad you brought that point up. And you know, Bill's a friend of ours, and he was in Thrive, and I've talked with him extensively about this issue. And the way I hold it, and for those of you who are listening who may not know Bill, what Tom is talking about is basically, as per the Constitution, restoring the printing of money to the government instead of, private bankers. And I see that as a potentially very fruitful stage one step. And many of you may be familiar with the Private Banking Institute and the work of Ellen Brown and so forth. And they're really recommending state-owned banks, which is a kind of a state-level version of the same thing. And North Dakota has had their own bank, and they were the only state that wasn't in trouble during the 2008 collapse. It has a lot of pluses going for it. It keeps a lot of money local. It's very transparent, and it can help out a lot. Ultimately, to me, it has the same problem that so many other political solutions do, which is, we're turning over our money to the government. And how has turning over things to the government worked out for us in every other realm? And so I think it could be good for a while. It's certainly a lot better than this fiat money thing that the private bankers are doing independently just for their own benefit. But I think in the long run, having the government in charge of deciding how much money there is in printing it is another mistake of centralization of power and giving rights to a few individuals that other human beings don't have. And that never turns out well. It hasn't in any country in the past. So what's the alternative? And to me, this is where we come back to individual sovereignty, you know, the wholeness of the individual human being. And the answer is, to me, a free market in currency. So anyone and everyone can make up whatever currency they want, an individual, an institution, whatever. You know, the monopoly folks have already got a lot of monopoly money printed, and if they can get somebody to use that for something other than playing a game, that's fine. But the fact of the matter is, very quickly, people are going to use the currencies which are most convenient and most reliable and most, you know, sustaining. And so that will sort out. So, you know, Bitcoin might be the best possible thing for certain international transactions. And, you know, puka shells might be great when you're on an island. And, you know, silver or gold might be great for, you know, large regional or inter-organizational transactions. But I think that the question that never gets asked, and I really learned this from this guy, John Gatto, is an expert in education that we interviewed for the movie. The first question I asked him when I sat down to interview him was, so, John, if you were if you woke up tomorrow morning and now you're the Secretary of Education for the whole United States, what kind of system would you put in? And he just kind of, you know, looked like this wise elder. He kind of smirked and looked at me and smiled. And he said, Foster, you're asking the wrong question. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, as soon as you're trying to impose a system, you're back in the same frying pan. And it was really a turning point in my own education, because it's true in education, it's true in media, it's true in governance, it's true in currencies. So the kind of exhale that each of us needs to learn to go through individually is, what if no one was in control of everyone else? What if there weren't a financial system? And most people are like, oh, well, that's going to be, it's anarchy, it's going to be chaos, you know, blood in the streets. And anarchy doesn't mean no organization. It simply means no rulers. So you would have currency companies, and you would have banks, and you would have insurance companies and lending houses and all sorts of things, but they would be held to a free market standard of reliability, authenticity, honesty. They would be personally liable if they defrauded or counterfeited. So the current existing institutions would be out of business very fast because they're felons and they're bankrupt. So this leap into no rules but no rulers, I suggest that people integrate that into their thinking in every sector of human endeavor. So I agree with Bill that returning it to the constitutional printing of money in the hands of the government could be a successful first step, and I'm all in favor of state banks. But let's say we limit it to 3 or 4 years, and they'll all be without government subsidies and sanctions and protection after 3 years. After 4 years, and then it's going to be an open market. So some sort of transition to, you know, free and honest.
Okay.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Thanks for discussing that.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Tom. Okay. Next up is Kate Phillips.
Okay, Kate.
While she's coming on, I see that at least a question she asked was, how safe are our retirement funds that are in mutual funds? Where is a safer place to put these funds? I think it's really important to check out with your IRA, whoever is holding that, check out where they're in, not only where they're invested, but who holds their cash, and in fact, who holds the stock certificates from the mutual fund. Mutual funds can be useful in that they spread the risk across a number of companies, but they also can be highly subject to the whims of the market. So if your entire investment fund, your retirement fund, is invested in the stock market, and the stock market as a whole collapses, let's say, you know, somewhere between 30% and 70%, you're in big trouble. I have heard, actually, believe it or not, of retirement funds that were willing to hold a certain percentage of precious metals. So I highly recommend that you check out that possibility and also see what banks they use, because if they're holding a lot of cash or certificates in, you know, Citigroup or Wells Fargo or something like that, and those banks all of a sudden go into confiscation mode, it wouldn't look great for your retirement.
So it didn't sound like we could get Kate's audio going.
Okay, we can't hear you, Kate. I hope you heard that, and I hope it's of some use.
Okay,
next up is, sorry, go ahead, Kimberly.
No, go for it.
Nancy Gillespie's up next. Nancy, can you hear us? I noticed these last two people are actually connected with the mobile device, so they should be able to connect with us, but maybe that's the issue. Nancy, are you there?
No.
Hey, Nancy, I think we can hear you.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, that's good.
Oh, okay, great. So sorry about that. Yeah, I'm on an iPad and thought I was having technical difficulties. Yes, yeah, so quick question is in regards, kind of twofold, from an investing in, continuing to invest in 401ks with companies, is my current employer, is that a good idea? And then I do have some IRA that I was thinking about cashing it out, but I know that, you know, there's that big 10% penalty, but you know, maybe it's better to take the penalty and the tax hit now where I can still do something smart with the money, like investing in properties and precious metals and all these things. So again, two questions. Do I continue to contribute into 401k, and should I cash out existing IRAs? And I know you guys aren't the experts on this. I'm just looking for kind of, you know, what do you think is a wise move?
Yeah, we wouldn't be allowed to give specific advice on that, but I can tell you that I have a number of friends who follow things pretty closely, who have decided that it's worth a penalty up front of potentially 10% to mitigate a possible loss of 30, 40, 50, 60%, which I think could easily happen in the market and potentially even in the fall. So if you can free up some funds without too much of a hit to invest more on your own out of the traditional markets and into real things like, you know, houses, land, precious metals, fruitful projects that could really help in the future, things like that. I've seen a lot of people feel good about that move after they made it. And whether they end up needing it or not, I think that they've been very happy they did.
Yeah, it's just, you know, most of the people that you talk to, whether it's, you know, friends, relatives, you know, the people that are in the market, investing firms and all that, everybody just gasps. It's like, oh my God, why would you ever do that?
Right.
You know, these are people that are not awake and aware. And so I just don't have a lot of people to even discuss these things with because nobody I know would do this.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing was happening in 1929.
Right. And I always ask everybody that, well, do you know, this did happen and it was in my parents' lifetime. So it is possible.
No, I was sitting on a beach in Michigan, actually, in the summer of 2008 with a bunch of relatives of mine. And Kimberly and I were going on, as we're wont to do, about the potential looming economic crisis. And, you know, a bunch of them were really listening, and some of them were just kind of rolling their eyes. Some of them were saying we're crazy and, you know, getting up and leaving and so forth. And then, you know, 2 months later, when everything came down, you know, I got some phone calls from people saying, hey, is this what you were trying to warn us about? What else do you know?
Right.
You know, one thing I want to add to that is I just saw this documentary by Martin Armstrong. It's called The Forecaster. It's online. It costs like, I think, $50 to rent it for a week. He's doing a theatrical review. And I certainly understand people don't all have $50. But I will tell you, I was fascinated. What I've done is I'm renting it and having a screening here and just inviting people over who wouldn't spend $50 to see a documentary, because he's done really interesting forecasting. And one of the things that Foster and I ran into is that forecasting trends of natural human behavior is one thing, but forecasting corruption is another. And I think a lot of what happened when everyone was saying, you know, gold prices have to go up, right? Because it's a natural thing based on need. But when they're artificially suppressed and you've got all these corrupt forces operating, how do you actually make accurate predictions? And I think what we found is that the predictions tend to be accurate, like gold is a good investment overall and the prices will go up. But when you just don't know. It's much later than we initially anticipated because of these forces. Anyway, Martin Armstrong has kind of figured out a way to do it on a different level where he's able to include corruption as part of what he's looking at. And he was able to succeed in his accurate predictions down to the day to such an extent that when he wouldn't give his formula to the CIA, they locked him up for 7 years without charges, two of those years. And so
they're not here.
He's now out and he's at it again, and he's forecasting with regard to the U.S. economy. I highly recommend his that movie, The Forecaster. And if you can rent it in a group where everybody puts in $5 and you all sit around and watch it and discuss it, I found it to be at least a very worthwhile consideration. And like we've said in all of this, you know, you want to prepare for the worst, and then expect the best and work to have the best happen. And I'm a big believer in awareness, as I said, being something to help mitigate some of this stuff. And also, I think it's absolutely, I just cannot imagine that we are not going to be living through big changes in the whole geopolitical, financial, global scene, and that it is already happening. And people are more and less protected from the impact of it, but that all of us will be impacted to some, you know, significant extent, and that these conversations are important, and then these resources that we find. So I'm just going to plug that for what it's worth. I've just found it really helped me. And like I said, I'm kind of hosting a screening here to just have other people take it into consideration. So his forecast, and you might even be able to just check out his website and have some, and his Facebook page and all that stuff. He posts really interesting things all the time. And it might be a way that you could get together with people in a mutual fund to say, could we at least look at this and discuss it together and say, what if this happens? Are we prepared for this eventuality in case it does?
Okay, I've got that written down. In fact, I just pulled it up, so I'm going to definitely do that. Thanks for
great.
That tip.
And
then just on the 401k question, continuing to invest in that, do you guys think that's a not such a smart move? Or?
Well, I personally would be very hesitant to turn my financial future over to anyone else at this point. You know, you can, if you've got significant funds invested, you can either pay for advice from a good professional investment advisor or manager, or if you've got a brokerage account, you can get free advice from someone at the brokerage house. But I personally have gone through several situations where I'm on the board of several different foundations, and the foundations have had professional money managers who have great reputations for decades, and you know they're really well respected. But again, when I saw what was coming in 2008, I said to the other members of the board, I said, I cannot remain on this board, which is taking fiduciary responsibility for this organization, unless we take action to mitigate what I am very confident is coming. And this was very upsetting to this money manager, who's actually, well, you know, one of the top 20 in the country. He thought at first I was kind of a, you know, one of these California conspiracy nutcases, but then he started seeing the predictions that I was making coming true, but he still didn't, you know, just couldn't make a move. And just so that you know, these professional money managers don't make any commission on the sales, purchases and sales of precious metals. So they're not only disinclined by their social, group, but by lack of financial incentive as well. So anyway, this one foundation finally took action, and they moved their portfolio. We actually had to relieve this guy of his responsibilities, and we kept one third of it in blue chip stocks that we believed in, you know, where the products and the way they treated their employees felt good to us. We went one third into cash and one third into gold. And that saved the foundation. If we hadn't done that, they would be out of business right now. So that's no guarantee of what's going to happen in the future. But if that, you know, gives you any reinforcements in terms of speaking up to more traditional opinions, I hope it can be helpful.
Okay. Thanks so much, you guys. I appreciate all the work that you do.
Thanks.
Thanks. We really appreciate this, you know, network of informed and engaged people, and can't tell you enough how much this is the inspiration for us in all that we do. And we will continue to share the insider scoop that we get. And, you know, we're always just kind of seeing, is this corroborated by something else over here? You know, it took us a long time to figure out this Asian dragon families, you know, from when we first heard about it to when we came out with it, it was like, you know what, this is just making more sense and looking more real than we had initially seen. And whenever that happens, we'll share it with you. So we appreciate that. And we also appreciate you sharing with each other the resources and insights that you have and experiences. So please use the comment section on the Thrive Together page to help each other out as well. And thank you, everybody. Foster, do you have closing?
Well, Kimberly, before we close, which we need to do, we're running a little overtime here. Would you or Goa make an announcement about our next event? Do you have that information?
Yeah. I'm happy to say that our next event is about global good news. It's going to be on June 27th at noon. We had two this month because we were traveling around learning about all this stuff last month. But the global good news really, you know, it's one of the things that we do in addition to finding out more about, you know, what's wrong. We also are really finding out more about what happens as people are waking up and creating these alternatives. So we've been putting that together. And I think it's a very important way to have us see who we are, to be reflected back for the goodness that's going on also, and not just for all the problems. So we have some very reality-based global good news to share on June 27th at noon. And we invite you to also share the good news that you found out either from your local communities or globally in any way. So it says from our research and yours, because we really want to hear from our network about the good news that you're finding also. So we hope you'll join us then.
Okay, yeah, thank you everyone for taking this time on a Saturday to join us. We just love you guys and love being able to have these important conversations with you. So the conversation, you know, will continue on the comment thread in the subscriber portal under this event. We welcome your resources. So many people in the chat and the Q&A have been sending in really valuable resources and URLs to other websites and so forth, and we'll keep those going out to the network. So thank you so much, and until next time, I hope you're thriving.
Yes, and thank you, Sky, for the array of brilliant questions and comments that you continue to put in on our page and here, and to all of you, thank you.
Yeah, let's just as we close here, let's just unmute everybody so we can thank and say goodbye to everyone in person.
All right.
Sure.
Thank you, everybody. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Love you. Divine in me honors the divine in you.
You guys like some brilliant, many blessings.
So you can see their names coming out.
I'd love to speak to the webmaster.
Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you.
Pamela, thanks for joining
us. Thank you.
Might want to bring
Ben Bull next time.
Thank you again.
Next event is when?
Thank you, guys. You're awesome.
Guys, well,
Hey, Goa, why don't we close that down?
Okay.
All right. Thanks for a great job, Goa, and keeping everything running smoothly, and to Mitch and to Rob.
Thank you, guys. Okay, ready to close?
Yes, let's meet in 5 minutes on our other media for a debrief.
Sounds good. Thanks, everyone. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye-bye, all.